nothing's really happening. It never tells. Just got up and waited for me.
And welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. I'm your host, Dave Glover. Joining me in the studio, Andrew Hall from the Downtown Business Improvement Area of Coburg. And as always, on Wednesday, this is Consider This Live. With me, Rob Washburn. Rob, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Andrew, nice to see you again.
Thanks, Dave.
Busy, cold, all of the above. How's the DBIA doing?
The DBIA is busy. The DBIA is cold. but we're warm at heart.
Well, exactly. And I know February is traditionally just a dog of a month for the BIA. I know restaurateurs and even some of the smaller retailers are downtown wondering, where'd all the people go?
Well, you know, it's the same thing for everybody. It's not just downtown, right? You've got a business to operate, and you've got sidewalks adjacent to your business. You've got extra work to do in a winter like this. And, you know, Public Works, they have their hands full with trying to deal with the bulk of snow. And it's not a great situation for anybody unless you're a skier.
Good point. People skiing down King Street to and from the shops. If you are going to do that, listeners, make sure you got those easy to click on and off skis. Those are really great. You probably stand those up outside the doorways.
Yeah.
We're probably not quite to that degree, but it has. I mean, we've seen accumulation pretty much every day this month.
Yeah. The challenge is that you've got snow plows that have to get the snow off the road for traffic, and then you've got merchants and landlords that have to get the snow off the sidewalks in front of their buildings. So what you end up with is these snow banks that are, you know, 3 or 4 feet high, and dealing with those is a nightmare because the only way to deal with it is to get rid of the snow, and mm-hmm. that means bringing in a crew to truck it out.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, the other issue for people who live downtown, and I know people who live on Division Street, myself included, where do you put your garbage on garbage day? There's nowhere to put it. I haven't put garbage out at my house for, thank God it's been so cold. That's all I can say, because, you know, otherwise it'd be just a nasty mess. But, I mean, I haven't been able to put garbage out of my house for probably 2 weeks anyway, maybe three, because of the snowbanks on Division Street. So
yeah.
If you are a resident on Division Street, I feel for you. That's all I can say at this point. As you say, though, there's nowhere to put it unless they truck it away. And I remember a couple of years ago they did that. They brought in the big, heavy trucks one night, and it was loud. But, man, when you got up the next day, it was nice. There were no 3-4-foot snowbanks.
To my knowledge, they've actually done that twice this year already.
Is that right?
Yeah, and it may have been more than that. I just didn't notice. But I know that the town doesn't have the equipment and the staffing to be able to do that. It has to be done overnight.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a third-party contractor that has to come in and do that work. And, yeah, it's a heck of a lot of work.
It is indeed. So how are things in downtown? You guys are busy down there. As I say, I know the weather's been a bit of a stumbling block for some folks, but
yeah.
Still pretty busy down there.
You know, we've gone through a process of changing some things around, and we're still in the midst of changing some things. We are working proactively towards where we expect things are going to be in the distant future and the near future.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes some adjusting. I assume, you know, at some point during this conversation, you're going to ask me about parking meters and you're going to want my 2 cents on that. Because, you know, it's a bit of a hot issue, and, you know, people get emotional about things like that. But having to deal with making those decisions requires a little bit of gumption, and it requires some very in-depth research and thinking and planning.
Well, let's talk about it then, because I think that's really one of the central things that has been debated for decades. I remember when I first came to Coburg and started reporting. I mean, this was a central issue, and it comes back and gets recycled many times. So could you first of all tell us about the background to it and how you came to the current situation?
Well, the current situation is we've just put in parking meters.
That's
but,
right.
But that was less than a month ago.
Yeah.
And the situation prior to that was 15 years or more of having no parking meters in the downtown core. Now, back 15 years ago when the decision was made to remove them, it actually coincided with the restructuring of King Street. So King Street was rebuilt and the cobblestones were put in. And the DBIA at the time said, since you've taken out those parking meters, to do the upgrades on King Street. How about we just leave them out, and that will make us more competitive with the mall and the big box stores that are destined to be here. And I think, you know, that's kind of a knee-jerk reaction. The idea of being threatened by a mall or a big box store, that's a real concern, but it's not really something that – it's not a nail in the coffin. What you have to look at that is an opportunity for a community to differentiate itself, okay? And when you suggest that the availability of free parking is an advantage or a disadvantage, what you've done is you basically said that people are driving for the purpose of parking. Yep. And they're not. They're driving for the purpose of doing business. What you don't realize as a consumer is that when you drive to a mall or a big box store that has a giant parking lot is that you're paying for that space. The business has to pay for it through taxes, mm-hmm. and that means that you've paid for it in your purchase. One way or another, you have to pay for parking. We all do. And when the parking meters were removed from the downtown core, the town said, hey, we were making money off of these meters. What's in it for us? Well, it just so happens that the DBIA has been paying $25,000 a year mm-hmm. to have those meters abolished, and you know, among other things. But the contribution to the overall parking program from the DBIA represented 17% of its operating budget.
And that was simply to offset the loss to the town of the revenue from parking meters.
In one thing, yes, absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. There were other things as well. The December parking program often included the hooding of meters. So there had been some contribution prior to that to compensate for lost revenue. But I don't want to bring it down to revenue only. It's not about revenue. The town could have easily said, we're putting the parking meters back in because we need to make more money. But they never did. Mm-hmm. They never said that. They never came to the DBIA and said, we want to do that. The town, if you ask my opinion, and it is just opinion, and mm-hmm. that's why I'm on Dave's show.
Thank you.
The town would never want to put itself in that sticky situation where it's going to stick its neck out and say, we're going to put paid parking in downtown.
Mm-hmm. Well, right? and that's how they kind of worded it. I mean, they basically blamed the DBIA.
I don't want to say they blamed it.
Well,
but, you know,
you know what? You don't have to say it. I'll say it.
You know,
I mean, they really did. They really blamed the DBIA. The letters to the editor that were coming into the local newspaper were all the DBIA. Why shouldn't they provide parking? I guess they don't want my business. All kinds of vitriol against the DBIA. The town basically was able to go, oh, it wasn't our idea. But in reality, it was. It was a consultation process between the town planning, the DBIA, and other share stakeholders, if you will.
But there was another part to this context that I think we're missing, and that was when we go back 15 years, the box stores were just coming in, and nobody truly understood what kind of an impact that was going to have on the local economy. And there was a huge fight. We remember when Walmart came in and then mm-hmm. Home Depot came in after. I mean, there was all kinds of public meetings. There was a lot of bleeding about what was going to happen. So I think when we have to remember that, because I think it's in that context, it seems reasonable because everyone was scared. I think when you say what you say now, you say it with 15 years of hindsight. And I think we have a much, much better understanding of how these box stores
Absolutely.
Are playing out in the local economy.
It's a really good point, Robert. 15 years ago, we didn't have the data that we have now.
Yeah.
And it would seem common sense would say, okay, if my competitor is offering something that appears to be an advantage, it would make sense for me to consider offering that as an advantage. The fact of the matter is, the minute you do that, you basically said that it's us against them,
mm-hmm.
all right? And what downtown Cobourg has proven for a century is that we have an ability as a downtown community to respond to factors, to change what sorts of businesses are there. I mean, there's a pretty high turnover rate of businesses. You think back 10 years, the whole downtown streetscape was different, right? And over 10 years, things have changed. You got all kinds of new restaurants. You got the condo development at the waterfront. Mm-hmm. You know, I find it fascinating talking to the guys that have worked in the downtown area for years and years, and they talk about the mountains of coal that were down on the waterfront. Mm-hmm. And, you know, wow, how things have changed so much. And now 15 years after those parking meters had come out, take a look at downtown. Is it better? Wow. Is it worse? You know,
what do your numbers show? What's your analysis?
My analysis is downtown has suffered through several economic factors and you know, some pretty bleak situations in terms of retail. And the end result has absolutely nothing to do with parking.
Right. No, it has to do with the economy, disposable income, whether or not people have the time, if they're not working more than one job, to be able to come down and shop.
So when we decided to take a close look at this situation, mm-hmm. you know, what we saw was that, you know, the retail brick and mortar vacancy rate was going up. Not substantially, but it was noticeable. And I think, you know, if you walk downtown, you will see some visible vacancies on street level. Just so happens that our vacancy rate has remained very much unchanged in the last 5-6 years. It's really quite stable. But what you don't see is retailers opening up. So you've got a visible, like when you see the bargain shop closing and Liquidation mm-hmm. World closing, you see those large retail spaces that are now empty. That's an eyesore, but it, you know, in terms of the success of downtown, there's still 230 businesses registered in that area, and it's mm-hmm. less than a square kilometer. Okay, so getting back to parking, what we started doing was some research, and we dove into that, and we were pulling studies out of Europe, Copenhagen. We were pulling studies out of Western Canada and the United States. And the bottom line of all these studies all said the same thing. Paid parking versus free parking had no impact on the success of a business center.
Right.
And so if that's the case, and all things being equal, a parking program that is self-sustainable is the most ideal one. And what I mean by that is, if anybody's familiar with downtown and has recently parked in the Covert Street parking lot, they know how rough it is, you know, and there are a couple of creek beds that run underneath that parking lot, and the surface is quite uneven. That's a sleeping giant. Because when things get really bad, it will be very expensive to upgrade that infrastructure. And it is public infrastructure that we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. Where's the money to fix that when that proverbial mess hits the fan?
Well, the provincial government today just announced more money for infrastructure and those kinds of projects. So maybe that's a source for us, you know?
It might be. But my visioning, and certainly the visioning of the DBIA and several councillors and people of the town, eventually came to be, look, we need to have some kind of program that has revenue coming into that so that when a major expense does appear, we're prepared for it. And so the DBIA last year, actually it was the year before, gave the town its blessing, as it were, and said, we believe that a paid parking solution is what's best for downtown. And that's not just a result of the costs associated with infrastructure. It's also associated with the inconvenience of only being able to park for an hour on the street.
One of the things,
I'm going to stop you right there, Rob. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to pay some bills. We'll be right back with more. Consider this live on Northumberland 89.7. You're listening to The Drive Time.
We've gone and done it again. You agree to plan your company's dinner party. Where will you hold it this year? Of course. There's nowhere better to hold large events than at the Legion Hall in Colbert. Hold your receptions and private parties at the Legion Hall, and you can get them catered. Call Shelley at 905-372-6554 and book the Legion for your event today. And call Sue at 905-342-2087 for catering.
The Royal Canadian Legion, Branch 133, is located at 136 Orr Street in Cobourg. Call 905-372-2231 and become a member today.
I just got married, and I wanted to leave my collection of flannel shirts to my new wife, Lucille, in case of an unfortunate hunting accident. If my cousin Bob was a lousy shot, let me tell you. G Jim McGrath made it easy to make a will so that my three previous wives could not touch my stuff. He's been lawyering for 30 years, and let me tell you, he knows what he's doing. Plus, he's a real nice guy. Call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999 and tell him Cletus sent you.
Head to the Royal Canadian Legion this month to catch these great events.
On Thursday the 19th, the general meeting starts at 7:30 in the evening. On Friday the 20th, come up for the ladies' auxiliary lunch, starting at 11:30 in the morning at a cost of $6. And on Saturday the 28th of February, come out and enjoy Bob's fabulous fish and chips for $12, followed by a dance, music by the Sounds of Time. This event will be in the auditorium. If you can't make the dinner, come out for the dance.
The Royal Canadian Legion is at 136 Orr Street in Cobourg. Call 905-372-2231 and become a member today.
That does not sound good.
I know. And who are you?
I'm the Midas Touch, and I think you need me.
It's that bad?
Not for long. Head to Midas for a comprehensive brake system evaluation, and if needed, we can install brake pads and shoes that come with a lifetime guarantee. How's that sound?
Like sound advice?
Nice one.
Visit Midas at 6 Strathy Road in Cobourg for great customer service from licensed Midas mechanics. For details, give them a call at 905-372-1959.
Trust the Midas Touch.
The story you are about to hear is true. Ed White, you saved this guy $20,000?
I fixed his refrigerator.
And?
So his wife doesn't need a new one. She doesn't get a new fridge. She doesn't need a whole new kitchen to go with it. I saved him $20,000.
Save big bucks. Call Ed White Appliance Service in Port Hope, 885-7109.
Yes, it is worth fixing.
Hello, friends. I'm Lauren Fevens. As I hear from more folks who join me on Sentimental Journey, it's clear how enjoyable the music of the 1940s and 50s is to them. They tell me how easily very special memories surface when a song from their past is played. So come along for more of those musical memories on this week's Sentimental Journey.
Sunday mornings at 10 on Northumberland 89.7.
Welcome back to the show. We got that great guy in the background there. I love that. Woo! Thank you very much for that. We do have a caller online. Jim, you're online. Go ahead.
Hi. I've actually been living here for about 12 months now, and it's a really great little town. I really like it. And when this parking meter thing came in, it really irked me, you know. And the reason why I'm saying this is because why did they not go from, say, Monday to Friday and leave the weekend free? Because in the summertime here, Cobourg is a beautiful little town, and all the hustle and bustle. And you've got all these motorcycles here. Now, these motorcycles are ridden by all kinds of ages here. And you can park a motorcycle, say, in Toronto for nothing because it's regarded as an environment better than a car. And you can get, say, four or five motorcycles in that one spot, you know. Just a little lower thought because I'd hate to see the downtown sort of die off. And I don't like to see all these storefronts. There's so many, and they're just all closing down.
Well, that's an interesting point, Jim. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
No problem. So, again, he raises an interesting point about motorcyclists and about whether or not we have free parking on weekends and such. I just want to point out real quickly, though, we do still have free parking in the downtown, right? I mean, not all the spots are paid spots. There's still some free parking spots in some of the lots. Am I correct on that for a certain amount of time? Anyway,
the vast majority of the parking downtown is still free.
Exactly.
It's only the on-street parking that have the meters. Mm-hmm. And the parking lots, there are hundreds of parking spaces that are, even during a very busy event weekend, are only at 90% capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's free, you know. The only drawback is that it's limited. The time is limited.
Right.
Yeah. But,
right.
You know, to Jim's point, he's right. Right now, the signs on the meters all say that the meters are enforceable 7 days a week. We don't know that they're actually enforced 7 days a week, but we do know that they are legally enforceable 7 days a week. I think that when the town planning and engineering put that in place, I think they were just, they're in a state right now where they've got to experiment and they have to figure a few things out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is charging on the weekends, is enforcing those parking meters on the weekends going to be of benefit? Is it going to be a detriment? Those things still need to be ironed out. And, you know, they're not set in stone by any means. So, you know, to Jim's point, yeah, that does raise an eyebrow. I can't say I was part of that decision-making process, but, you know, we have to figure it out. We've got to see what works and what doesn't work. You know, it could be, let's face it, we get a lot of people coming in from the GTA who are used to dropping $20 to park.
No, that's true. And no, that's a valid point. But, you know, a couple of the issues that, and these are things that could be brought back to the parking committee, the idea of parking more than one motorcycle in a parking space, because quite frankly, you can do that. You can
put
four or five in there. And also the fact that it's basically free after business hours, right? I mean, after 5 or 6 o'clock, I think it's
six o'clock. Yeah.
So, I mean, in the evenings, if you're going to a restaurant, you want to take your significant other out for dinner or what have you, that's still free. And as you say, the vast majority of space is available downtown. Not on street parking, but off-street parking in Covert Street, for instance, and places like that. There are quite a few free parking spots, hundreds actually, and so people can still take full advantage of those. It's just the on-street parking for King Street, which is what we're talking about right now with regards to parking meters. I do have another caller on the line, and we're going to take that call. Hello, go ahead.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment. My problem with the meters is not the, you know, the buck and a half it's going to cost you to do whatever it is, because, you know, if you're not going to spend the buck and a half, you're probably not going to buy too much anyway. But my problem is just plain parking. If you're going shopping and you want to want to go to the mall, you know you're going to get a parking spot close to where you want to be. I have a
Close to the mall main entrance anyway, not necessarily close to the store you want to go to.
Well, there's three entrances to the mall, you know, like you can park in, you know, if you want to park in that one spot. But all I'm getting at is, you know, if you got to go around the block four times, you know, to try and find a parking spot, I think that's more of a pain than putting a buck and a half into a meter, you know.
That's an interesting point, but I still want to remind people that the parking that's available on Covert Street, for instance, is literally on the other side of the main street. So you just got to walk through the Henley Arcade, bam, you're right there in the shopping district.
Are you concerned about the availability of parking?
This is what I'm like. I do service calls on different places and whatnot, and, you know, I end up parking, you know, eight blocks away, and I got to carry a toolbox and parts and things and whatnot. You know, it's just, this is, you know, I'm not whining about that, but I mean, that's just an example of what, if you can't get to where you want to be, that's more of an issue to me than the cost of parking. I'd gladly pay for parking. And if I had a spot downtown, I would gladly have a parking meter in front of my store that costs money, as long as people could actually park there, you know.
So I'm really glad that you called, actually, because you actually make a really good point. And what we know from our research, and I've even seen over the last couple of weeks, is that people have become far more economical with their parking on the street. And what I mean by economical is, if they have determined that they need 2 hours to do something, they pay for 2 hours. And if they've determined that they need 5 minutes to do something, they pay for 5 minutes. And what that means is that people aren't abusing the parking situation on the streets, which was the case when there was just posted time limits and it was free. You know, people would push the envelope a little bit and they'd park for as long as they can. You know, they may loiter, they may even sit in their car on the street. But what we're finding and what we know from research is that people don't do that as much when there's paid parking on the street. And what it means for somebody like yourself, caller, is that you actually now have a greater opportunity to find on-street parking near the business you have to service or what have you. And that's a good thing, we think. So what we're going to find is that you're going to have people that are parking for much longer, and you're going to have people that are parking for much shorter durations. And the turnover of vehicles is actually much greater now as a result of the parking meters.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're getting back in the time allotted. You know, like if they put a quarter in and they get 15 minutes, then they make sure they're back in 15 minutes.
Exactly.
Yep.
And you go to the different place. And it probably also, good thing about paid parking is it probably moves the employee, business owner type of really all day parking over to Covert Street or to the other places, so that it frees up. So, you know, as long as there is parking, I don't mind paying for it.
Well, thank you for that, Ed. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Thanks, calls.
Yep.
So, again, you know, the one caller, Jim, who's newer to the community, says, you know, maybe we could tweak, you know, maybe only have it paid during the week and on weekends have it free or have it free for longer periods of time. So, great comments. But I do want to remind the listeners out there that we still have plenty of free parking in the downtown. So that's not necessarily an issue in terms of parking, but in terms of being able to park right in front of the store you go to, yeah, you're going to have to pay if you want to park directly in front of a store. And like you said, if you park at the mall, you're not pulling up in front of the store you're going to. Odds are you're parking at the mall, you're walking in the main entrance, and you may walk right, you know, for the full distance of the mall before you get to the store you want to go to. So it's not really any closer.
We took a measuring wheel. And we walked from the parking lot behind CIBC Bank downtown, and we walked up to King Street and across in front of Victoria Hall to 3rd Street, and then across King Street to George and across George to Scotiabank. That was a shorter distance than parking at the closest parking spot at the mall at the front door and going to Sport Check.
So there you go. I mean, and again, you can't knock that. That's hard evidence, listeners. They took a walking wheel, one of those meter sticks, I guess, and it told you how the distance, and you were able to make that determination. I'm glad you did that, because so many people used to say to me when I was at the beginning, well, I can park right at the mall, and there's, you know, I can walk. And I said, well, you're not parking in front of Sport Check. You know, you've got to get out of your car. You got to make that walk.
But I think it's part of the urban mythology, I think, of the town. And I go back to the history of it, because these issues resurface time and time again. And I think a lot of it is perception rather than the actual facts. And I hope that, you know, we're early days now. We've only had the meters maybe a couple of weeks at that. We haven't felt the full impact of it. I think it's going to take a year or two before we really start to understand just how this all works in the downtown and whether it's advantageous or disadvantageous.
Exactly.
You know.
Well, and the DBIA's got so much more that they're dealing with right now. I mean, you've got a new board. A lot of people probably didn't know that Teresa Rickerby was the chair of the Downtown Business Improvement Association. If you read her literature, you probably would. But if you hadn't and you voted for her, obviously, as a sitting member of council, she can no longer be the chair of the Downtown Business Improvement Area. So now you have a new chair. So now you got to break that guy in. Or that gal. I believe it's a man, so that's why I use that term. But again, so there's a learning curve, right? Now, I mean, when you have someone like Teresa, for instance, who's very hands-on, and she's really task-oriented, and she's really good at keeping people motivated and keeping them, if you will, on message, it's different now, though, right? You've got a different person in charge, so you've got to work with the way they deal with things.
Who is the chair, but just so we're clear?
Randy Crossan is our chairperson. And Randy is the owner of two businesses downtown. He's the owner of Daddy's Electric Tattoos, and he's the owner of Insight Sign Company. And Randy, he's been downtown for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
I've never known anybody to be involved in so many local committees and groups and so active in the downtown community. He's out walking around all the time, and just he's got his finger on the pulse of what's happening down there, very in tune with the downtown.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know what? It raises an interesting point that Randy's the chair now, and I'm going to point this out because polite people wouldn't, but I'm going to do it. You know, when Randy came to the community, one of the things that was everybody was all up in arms about the downtown with all the tattoo parlors and the pawn shops and all of this other stuff, you know, and the negative connotations that sort of went with that, whether they were real or just perceived. And now you have Randy, who is and still remains, you know, a guy who has tattoos. And a guy who some people, when he first came to the downtown, you know, he was one of the guys they were making disparaging remarks about. And here he is now. Chair of the Downtown Business Improvement Association. So, you know, two things. One, you can't judge a book by its cover, clearly. And you know what? Randy Crossan is probably one of the most dedicated business owners the downtown has seen in probably decades. And again, you know, are these the kind of business people we want in our downtown? I would say yes, absolutely.
I had some very candid conversations with Randy. He was on the board when Teresa Rickerby was chair. He was a vice chair for some time. And when we went through this transition and Teresa had to resign because of her running for council, I said to Randy, why do you want to do this? Why do you want to be so involved in this sort of thing? I mean, these are big shoes to fill.
And it's also a thankless task. Let's point that reality out. For those of you that don't know, the DBIA are all volunteers, like we are here at the radio station. Nobody gets paid to be on the board of the DBIA.
No.
It's not like some of the other committees around town where people actually get paid. And yet you get crap from everybody. You get crap from store owners. They don't like the way the BIA is doing things. And you, so you get, you know, crapped on by them. Then you get crapped on by everyday citizens. And then even occasionally, as has been in the past, probably not with this council, but there have been some cheap shots thrown at the DBIA and the board by elected members of council. So, you know, when I say thankless task, I mean seriously thankless task.
Thanks, Dave. Yep, you're right. It is pretty thankless. But, you know, in conversation with Randy, you know, and I think it's the same with all the board members, I've said, why do you want to do this? Why do you want to be involved? And, you know, his answer to me was, I've got kids and I want them to live here in this community. And that's all he said. You know, he didn't go on and on about anything. He just said, you know, I want a downtown community that my kids feel successful and safe in, you know, and that's why he's doing it. Wow. I mean, what else can you ask for?
So what's at the top of your agenda these days then?
Oh, wow. I would say there is no top to my agenda, Robert. Yeah. I would say, you know, it's mostly spinning plates. Everything seems to be at the top. Right now we're in budget season, okay? And we have a very forward-thinking council that is taking a very, very close look at the budgets at the town level and across all departments. And John Henderson, deputy mayor, is the council representative on the DBIA board, and he has asked us to be quite thorough with our budget process and have it ready in time for council's consideration. People maybe don't understand that the DBIA is a municipally appointed board, which means that, yes, they're all volunteers. And they have their own budget and they operate as an independent not-for-profit entity, but they are appointed by council and therefore their budget has to be approved by council as well.
Right.
So there's, you know, there's quite a bit of oversight there we have to be thorough about that. But we are looking at some really interesting changes this year. We are in the situation, you know, I don't want to dive back into parking, but the DBIA was paying the $25,000 a year into the parking program, and we now have that $25,000 back as a result of us saying, please go ahead and implement paid parking. So that gives us an opportunity to take a closer look at what we're capable of doing. Now, the DBI's mandate is promotion and beautification of downtown. One of the projects that we're looking at right now is new street banners. We've had the same ones for the last 5 years or so, and you know, they're getting a little bit old and tattered and more expensive to repair. So we're looking at some new colors and some new design ideas for that. We're also looking at a very special publicity project that I can't talk about, but is going to be quite amazing when it's first announced. So needless to say, there are some projects that we're working on that we weren't previously able to do, but they're going to be big and they're going to be impactful. And we have the support of the town of Cobourg behind us, as well as the county of Northumberland.
How much is your budget, just so that we're clear, total budget?
Our budget is based on a tax levy.
Yep.
So the property owners of the downtown buildings are levied a special amount on their tax bill. And it totals, I want to say, last year, about $160,000. Okay. We haven't set it in stone yet for this year, but it'll be extremely close to that. Yep. And
any chance they'll be dropping the levy at all for some of the property owners, since they're not having to cover the cost of parking?
I
know there's guys who own businesses downtown. I mean, I'm sure Mr. Louie and his wife are wondering, are we going to see a reduction in our levy because we don't have to do this anymore? Or?
I don't think that's going to happen. I think our levy is actually a little bit behind where it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, for us to effectively promote and beautify downtown, we could do with quite a bit more of a budget. But like I said, now we have an opportunity to start doing some things that will be impactful because we've got some of that money coming back. So I don't foresee a reduction in the overall levy.
Please tell me you're going to be advertising in the GTA, though. I mean, one of the things that's sort of always been a thorn for me is the fact that we have both the town, the even the county. I never see advertising in any Toronto publications or any magazines or even online telling people to come to beautiful Northumberland. We see ads for Port Hope. I've seen ads for Port Hope in those magazines, but nothing for Cobourg, nothing for Northumberland in general. Are we going to jump on that, you think?
For a very long time, and certainly with the boards that I've dealt with so far while I've been employed by them, there's been a very hard line drawn between what the DBIA should be advertising and what tourism should be advertising, mm-hmm. or where they should be advertising. The town of Cobourg has its own tourism department,
mm-hmm.
okay,
which doesn't advertise in the GTA.
Oh, they do. They do.
Perhaps the communications people can point me to those ads because I've never seen them. Yeah. And it is kind of annoying to me. I mean, as a former business owner and as a person who lives in the town and shops downtown, it is kind of weird to me that, you know, I can see ads for Port Hope or I've even seen ads for Campbellford in Toronto publications, but never have I seen ads for Cobourg.
It's interesting, though, because – and this is part of the thing that I'd like to explore just for a moment is how these different organizations mesh together. I mean, you're talking about tourism versus the downtown and your mandate. And could you just take a moment and talk – because you mentioned very quickly, and I want to go back to it, is what is your mandate and how does it relate to things, for example, like Chamber of Commerce or the Revitalization Initiative? Because you're sort of in a different zone.
Yeah, you're right, Robert. DBIA has always been in a different zone, and it is with every BIA across Ontario. I guess the DBIA's mandate, as written in bylaw, is to promote and beautify the downtown, specifically areas, public areas that would not necessarily be dealt with at the municipal level. Okay, for example, the hanging baskets, the flower baskets. It's not a project that the town would necessarily undertake or fund, but because the DBIA exists and its members contribute to their operating budget, now you have the opportunity to spend a little bit more money in that public space and beautify it. So there's a good example. Another example would be advertising. How do we promote the downtown? How do we encourage local people to keep their dollars local? For some very good reasons. So the DBIA has spent a fair amount of money historically on local marketing initiatives.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so I guess getting to your question, Robert, it has always been in my mind the question of where is that line drawn? Where does the tourism department start and stop? Where does the DBIA start and stop? And frankly, it's fuzzy. DBIA doesn't have any limitations on how it promotes itself, really. It can do what it would like. But I know that a lot of the local merchants feel that the bulk of the marketing efforts have to be local. That's not to say, though, that there aren't opportunities outside. Like, how many different communities send their citizens away to shop in Cobourg? Probably plenty nearby. Durham region is a great example. I know a lot of customers, regular customers, that come out of the Durham region.
Mm-hmm.
Are we advertising in the Durham region? Well, I can tell you the DBIA is not specifically, but people are still coming here. So are there more people in the Durham region that we could be talking to that might come and become regular customers? That's a distinct possibility. So looking forward, it just so happens that recently I've been in discussions with various departments at the town to discuss joint marketing initiatives. And we don't have anything concrete at this point, but we have identified that there could be greater opportunities if we sort of put our heads together and figure out where we're spending money and why and who we're trying to speak to.
So if we're talking about fuzziness, then let's talk about DBIA and the revitalization, because there's an area that must be confusing to some people.
Sure. Downtown revitalization is actually a Town of Cobourg-driven initiative, okay? It is done so in partnership with the DBIA, the Chambers of Commerce, the Chamber of Commerce, Northumberland Chamber of Commerce, also, I think the Business Advisory Center of Northumberland was involved to a certain degree. And some community citizens groups as well, like the Friends of Downtown Cobourg. It's a group of people that voice their opinions and volunteer occasionally to help things move along downtown. So really, it's sort of an all groups, all hands on deck initiative. And who does it stand to benefit? Everybody.
So who's accountable then when we start talking about all those surveys that got done a couple of years ago and some of the recommendations and out of that? Who's going to stand up and say it got done or it didn't get done?
I hope the community can stand up and say this got done and this didn't get done. There's a roadmap. The Vitalization Action Plan, which is available on the website at coburg.ca, is there. It has timelines and budgets outlined for all the initiatives that are to be undertaken. And I hope that people take the time to go and take a look at it. But at the end of the day, it is primarily town staff who have been asked by council to implement these projects. And so I assume that council has to take accountability for that direction.
One of the things that was surveyed when they did the business survey during the revitalization study was they talked about a slight increase in business between 2012 and 2013. I'm wondering, I haven't seen any figures come out since that time. What's the business environment been like down there? And has there been another increase over the last year or two?
I couldn't tell you that exactly, Robert. There's some pretty complex methods they use to track the amount of business that happens. And frankly, I'm not an expert in that area at all. What I can tell you is that the business environment continues to be challenged. Economic factors continue to challenge that environment. Retailers are constantly having to think different. Even somebody that's been open for 5 years has to rethink what they're doing right now. Mm-hmm. And that's going to happen quite steadily, I think, for years and years to come. So, your question is difficult for me to answer. I think that when the Economic Development Department releases information that says there's been an increase in business activity, then we have to take that for what it's worth. And that is, well, that's nice. But, at the end of the day, is the guy who's trying to sell stuff on King Street seeing that?
Well, I guess that gets me then to the next thing, which is how do we then measure how successful we are? Because you talked earlier about vacancies and the vacancy rate's similar. And again, urban mythology is I walk downtown and, oh my God, there's all these vacant stores. Things are going bad. You're talking about a challenging business environment. But we don't know if business is going up in the downtown and whether people are being successful. So how then do we look at this situation and start to say we're making ground or we're not making ground? How do you do that?
The way I look at it is really, we don't have a mandate to measure those things. That's not really what we're in place to do as an organization. We do keep our ear to the ground, though. And what we do is we talk to merchants. And, the discussion is invariably, how's business? How are things going? People will say, my sales are down this year over last year, but, I've been able to adjust my inventory so my margins are the same. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good news. But we still have that challenge. And, we do know of some businesses that are really having a hard time right now. There are programs available to them through the county and through the town that hopefully they'll take advantage of to try to get them through there. But, you're talking about measurables, and there are so many different things that you can use to measure. You can look at vacancies. Sure, look at vacancies. My favorite measurable is footsteps. How many people are actually downtown at any given time? Foot traffic to me reflects a vibrant downtown community. Is, no amount of marketing or special events is going to tell your regular citizen in Coburg to come downtown and become a regular customer. You just have to make sure that you've got what those customers need. Mm-hmm. Right.
So then here's the question. If the DBIA is dedicated to flower pots and signs, is it time that we started to consolidate some of the business organizations so that there is more of an integration and more of an overall mandate to a body to be accountable? Or do we still need these separate bodies? I mean, should we be amalgamating these, or should we still have what we have?
At this point, I would say no, we don't need to consider amalgamation.
Why not?
because that, you know, the problems, the challenges that we face aren't because we have different organizations. The challenges that we face are because these organizations haven't been able to come together and find a solution yet to those challenges. I don't necessarily think that amalgamation is the best solution, only because people are parts of these organizations for different reasons. Okay, the Chamber of Commerce exists. It's a member-driven organization. Mm-hmm.
You know, most DBIA members are members of the Chamber as well.
I don't know about most, but I know many. And there's some crossover there. It just so happens the Chamber of Commerce is a member of the DBIA, and the DBIA is a member of the Chamber of Commerce. But the Chamber offers very different benefits to its members than the DBIA does. The Chamber offers meet and greet opportunities. It offers travel discounts. It offers discounts amongst its own members. It offers listings and, you know, various other opportunities for its members. And the DBIA offers a different advantage, but DBIA is geographical. Okay, so you have to have a business within a geographically defined area in order to take advantage of what it offers. And what it offers is, you know, some really nice streetscapes, a downtown that's extremely clean. We actually have one of the most clean downtowns in Ontario as per the Ontario Business Improvement Area Association.
Nice.
You know, so there are different benefits to being a member of these organizations. And I don't think it's right to amalgamate. What I think is right is that we all get together at the table once in a while and say, hey, what are you doing? Hey, what are you doing? And it just so happens I'm doing this. Hey, can we partner on these things? And downtown vitalization is a great example because we all stand to benefit from it, so we should all be pitching in.
Great. Well, what's happening? Any special events coming up in the next short little while now? I know winter's about to end. How was Winterlude this year?
The winter festivities is run by the town of Cobourg, and they did some really nice things this year. I mean, it was so cold, though. You know, it was coincided with Valentine's Day this year. But, you know, they had giant ice sculptures and an ice chair, and they had beaver tails down at the Frank giving, you know, with hot chocolate and of course, beaver tails. And lots of activities going on. We coincided that with our Feel the Love in Downtown Cobourg event, which is just a banner event so that stores can do their own in-store promotions. We had French cafe music playing in the background and Poetry in Cobourg Spaces, which is the Poet Society of Cobourg, basically, was down reading love poems to couples as they walked around downtown. So it was quite an atmosphere over that weekend. But coming up, great question. Girls' Night Out in May.
That's the first big spring event. That's the first event kicking off the season for the
BIA. Yeah. That's one of my favorites. And then we're going to have an Easter egg hunt for kids in April. And the Busker and Street Festival comes up in June. And some really exciting things set up for the Busker and Street Festival, including the continuation of our new evening fire show, Northumberland Lights. Which the response to that blew me away last year. We just did this little fire show with some of the performers from the festival, and 700 people came back at 9 o'clock to watch this.
So. Wow. Oh, so good turnout. Yeah. My guest has been Andrew Hall. He is the
coordinator
for the Downtown Business Improvement Association here in Cobourg. Also, Rob Washburn, great to have you here, Rob. Thanks for joining us today for another fantastic episode of Consider This.
Thank you.
We got a couple of great guests coming up. In a couple of weeks, we've got the Deputy Chief coming, is that correct?
Deputy Chief of the Cobourg Police, Paul Vandergraaf, is coming over to talk about the 3-year business plan. So looking forward to that in 2 weeks.
And we are looking forward to that. I'm Dave Glover. You've been listening to The Drive Time and Consider This Live. And I want to thank our studio audience for being here today. And, you know, we couldn't do the show without you. And here they are, the Bells and Moody Manitoba. We'll see you tomorrow, folks.
It's a moody Manitoba morning. Nothing's really happening. It never does.